This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. It's a common misconception that most LGBTQ history and activism occurred on the East and West Coasts, but Wisconsin has been a national leader in its pioneering set of legislative victories. In fact, Wisconsin became the first state in the nation to enact a gay rights bill in 1982. Wisconsin has also to this day been the only state to elect three out members of Congress. These statewide accomplishments were made possible by local LGBT legislators and elected officials, activists, business people, everyday citizens, and their allies. This history is chronicled in the second volume of Dick Wagner's work on gay history in Wisconsin, Coming Out, Moving Forward. The book covers the challenges that LGBT Wisconsinites faced post-Stonewall between 1969 to 2000. Dick Wagner joins me now, and he starts by explaining what drove Wisconsin LGBT activists during this period.
It was this very small group of activists who had decided that from the signal of Stonewall, they were going to try and change things in this state. And it's remarkable that we think a lot of LGBT history happened on the East or West Coast, but Wisconsin was a leader here in the 1980s in a whole series of victories. I like to talk about us as a gay laboratory of democracy, that we passed the first in the nation gay rights bill in 1982. And for almost a decade, we were the only state that had such a bill. And so we were experimenting with how that would work in reality, how you would enforce a gay rights bill, how that would overflow into lots of other policies like AIDS, how it would actually stimulate a whole bunch of activism all around the state that keyed off of that victory.
Right. So this 1982 Wisconsin gay rights law, can you explain this bill and who was involved in this unprecedented effort in the first of the nation?
Well, the prophet on sexual reform and gay rights in the state was Lloyd Barbie, an African-American assemblyman from Milwaukee, and he had endorsed sexual reform measures in state law even before Stonewall. He didn't expect them to pass. He believed in bills that would educate the legislature. He then passed the baton to David Clarenbaugh as another assemblyman who had got elected at the age of 18. Right after 18-year-old voting came on. And Clarenbaugh became the leader in the assembly for gay issues, and he was pushing the consenting adults bill. And the community had focused on sort of decriminalizing homosexual acts, because as long as their status as criminals was there, they thought we couldn't make other results. In fact, they used that consenting adults bill push in the late 70s to actually show that both Republicans and Democrats could vote on a gay issue favorable to the community and not suffer political retribution. And so that set up an atmosphere in the state legislature that when we got to the gay rights bill, they had already learned that they could vote positively on gay issues. The strangeness was the gay rights bill passed before the consenting adults bill passed, because it just took more time to build the consenting adults bill. The other thing that was very important was that the community, from its beginning in Wisconsin, from the Council on Religion and the Homosexual, which occurred in Milwaukee in the early 1970s, set up a dialogue between the religious communities, the mainline churches in the state, and the gay community. And those religious allies became very important for passage of the gay rights bill, particularly when they were joined in by the Catholic Church in the 1980s as well.
Right, and I do want to touch upon that a little more, but before we get to that, you know, do you think many Wisconsinites, even not necessarily just outside of the LGBTQ community, but even within it, would know that Wisconsin set this stage for activism?
No, it's largely unknown. And I mean, one of the reactions I had to the first book was, oh, I never knew that. And the reaction, I think, to the second book is, oh, that was happening here? You know, I mean, so our history is largely unknown. It's part of the erasure of our whole culture. And that's really the goal of the two volumes, is to try and end that erasure of LGBT history in Wisconsin. because folks don't know about it. And I'm enough of a Midwest chauvinist that I also want the folks on the coast to know about it. Hey, you know, a lot of things happened here too.
Yeah, and you know, this book goes through the many, many people, groups, individuals involved within a lot of efforts. But just to narrow it down for our listeners a little bit, let's start with who you feature on the cover.
Okay. One of the cover photos is of Lou Sullivan, who was a female-to-male transsexual from Milwaukee. He wrote for GPU News and became a national leader in the transsexual movement. Another photo is a couple of AIDS Walk members in the Milwaukee AIDS Walk. There's also some lesbian marchers, and then there's a fifth anniversary party for the state gay rights bill, where you have a series of out elected officials, including a very young Tammy Baldwin as a county supervisor, along with myself and David Clarenbach and some others.
You know, obviously, Madison is known for a place where legislation is made and changed through the whole state. But I'm curious if Milwaukee and Madison cultures and climates in LGBT grassroots movements, how do they compare to one another? Were there certain characteristics to one city over the other?
Milwaukeeans always thought they were more conservative than Madison, and maybe they were, but, you know, Milwaukee had a socialist mayor until the 1960s. And so there were three jurisdictions, the city of Madison in 1975, the city of Milwaukee in 1980, and then Dane County in 1980, that all passed gay rights measures before the state in 1982. And Governor Lee Sherman Dreyfuss, a Republican, would cite both Madison, Milwaukee, and Dane County as part of the reasons that the sky had not fallen after such measures had been adopted and why he could sign the state gay rights bill. So, and one of the things that came out of Milwaukee was that Leon Rouse helped organize the Council for Fundamental Judeo-Christian Rights, which brought a lot of religious support to the gay rights bill as well. So Milwaukee had the largest gay community in the state. It was one that was very socially active, shall we say. Milwaukee had three baths and multiple bars. And there was an interesting article I found about whether they could support five lesbian bars or not at one point, when Chicago only had seven and Milwaukee now had five. So Milwaukee's community really was a very interesting one, but it also led some of the political organizing in the state with the first survey of statewide candidates for the legislature and then published the responses in GPU News. And so GPU News out of Milwaukee was really an important state resource during the whole 1970s. So there was a key role there that Milwaukee.
Yeah, and the GPU is the Gay People's Union newspaper. Was there a main Madison newspaper or organization that was comparable?
In the 70s, there was the Renaissance, which was the newsletter of the Gay Center. It didn't have the whole range of things that GPU News had. GPU News actually had a national circulation and was a much broader in its coverage. There was also Amazon, which was published from the Women's Center in Milwaukee, which had significant lesbian content as well, and that had a broad circulation too. And so both of those publications were strong. Later you had Out in was published from Madison, and then you had the Wisconsin Light published in Milwaukee. So I had a whole chapter on gay media in the state, and it was a very significant factor in trying to end the ignorance both within the community and in the larger community statewide.
Right. And one key part of that that the activists worked towards was cultural acceptance, whether it's through pushing media throughout the state, or what were some of the other strategies used to accomplish this?
Well, once the law got adopted, and you had Tony Earl become elected governor in 1982, he established a council on lesbian and gay issues. And part of the mission of that council was to take the word around the state about these new advances that were being done in terms of the laws. And we would set up a whole series of meetings with local officials and their gay community representatives. And those conversations had almost never occurred in most of the cities around the state. They'd, of course, occurred in Milwaukee and Madison and a few other places. But by opening those doors with a letter from the governor's office, we could get local officials, DAs, social services, and those kinds of folks to come to a meeting and hear the concerns of the LGBT community. And most of them had never been asked those questions before in a public forum. And so they had to respond and talk about how maybe they could redirect resources and have socially sensitive services in their community.
And one thing you touched upon was also the significance of the gay community embracing religious allies, you know, not just in everyday support, but eventually for legislation later on.
Right. There was a whole range of denominations in the state that had a response. The Council on Religion and the Homosexual in Milwaukee had directly led to the Methodist Conference in Wisconsin adopting a statement in support. And that led to Bishop Marjorie Matthews, who was also the first woman Methodist bishop in the country, to lend support to consenting adults. And later, she was joined by a whole chorus of bishops in the state gay rights law as well. And so, and then you had ongoing developments within denominations about gay friendliness. Lutherans Concerned had their first national conference and organizing meeting in Milwaukee. The state played a very important role in some of those religious discussions.
And one thing that's so important in our culture is language, right? How people identify. So how was the community coming to terms with that in the 70s and beyond, and even with men being slow in recognizing lesbian presence or vice versa? How did that play out?
Right. Well, that was interesting, particularly in Amazon and then later in Hagrag, which was another lesbian publication. They talked about how they felt gay men were the most isolated folks in society because at least the women's community could relate to the broader feminist movement, where there is no equivalent for the men in terms of gay men relating to anything in the male community. And so in some ways there was sort of this pitying by women of gay men. But gay men also found their own support amongst themselves and were very active in organizing that. In fact, one of the things that was interesting is the gay males dominated some of the early organizations enough that the women broke away and formed Gay Sisters in Madison. And there was also a lesbian feminist group that formed in the state. And some places like La Crosse had a very strong separatist lesbian feminist community too. So it varied a lot. Places like Eau Claire and La Crosse, they realized they had to be together as a community. They were too small otherwise. So it was interesting to see those different kinds of responses that would occur.
Of course, one factor that played into later whole community togetherness and collaboration was the AIDS crisis, despite the terrible outcomes it had for people. How is that significant in our state history?
Well, the AIDS crisis was very significant. In Wisconsin, as elsewhere, did draw together gay men and lesbians to meet this common threat, because the AIDS crisis sort of raised the hysteria. In fact, they talk about going to the war conference when the community felt like they were really besieged, both by rising homophobia and the AIDS crisis. And so they had to get together. And Wisconsin was lucky in that because we had the gay rights bill and we had significant legislative leaders like David Clarenbach, that we could get an early HIV confidentiality and testing program up. We cooperated with the State Medical Society on an early statement about compassionate care that urged cooperation with gay organizations around the state for counseling about various AIDS issues. And so we had a much more positive response in this state. In fact, one of the things I found very unique was a Minnesota activist was urging Minnesotans to cross the border and get their AIDS test in Wisconsin, because Wisconsin had HIV confidentiality and they had non-discrimination laws against sexual orientation, and Minnesota had neither of those things. In fact, Minnesota was long fighting a repeal of sodomy, as they called it, whereas here we were a little more smart in calling it consenting adults bill, because the sexual law provisions did encompass both heterosexual and homosexual acts. But the sexual privacy coalitions were almost entirely made up of gay folks rather than any straights looking for relief from the law.
Now, you have a long history of being involved in change in Wisconsin. You know, you're a leading player in several of these stories as co-chair of the Governor's Council on Lesbian and Gay Issues and the first openly gay chair of a county board in Wisconsin, Dane County, I believe. And, you know, in your experience personally working on these issues and then looking back at it through a historical and a research lens to frame it for readers, how did that impact you in looking back on it that way?
Well, it was interesting because I had saved like 40 boxes of what I called LBGT archives in my storage locker. And so when I started the history project, I first dug out all of those and organized those. And then I visited a lot of other libraries and archives and gathered probably an almost equal amount, another 40 boxes of stuff. And so I had to be careful about not making it too personal, but I didn't want to not include my own insights from being there at some of the tables where significant issues were decided. And I did a little appendix about a seat at the table. So I helped found the National Association of LGBT Elected Officials. And at one point, Wisconsin, particularly Madison, had 7 out elected officials in 1989, which is more than any other place in the country. And we built what I called a Hominturn of where we supported each other mutually as that group of out officials here in the capital city.
You mentioned with research, you yourself saved boxes, but had you not done that, I imagine trying to find primary material to help be included in this book would be a hard and frustrating task, because it's not the fact that records aren't kept, it's just that it was dangerous to for some time, and then when stuff was starting to be kept, like, maybe it wasn't top priority for all the people involved in these. So what do you think needs to either be kept in mind going forward in keeping LGBT history moving forward and also recovering what we can from a lot of the timeframes you've looked at, not just in this book, but the book you previously wrote before this period?
Save your stuff. Donate it to an archive. You know, the Milwaukee LGBT Archive at UW-Milwaukee at the Goldemeyer Library is a wonderful resource, and they worked on that starting with a history tent at Pride Fest and just built up a remarkable collection. Here in Madison, we started a similar archive with UW-Madison Archives, and some of the things I was able to include in both Volume 1 and Volume 2 came out of that archive collection effort. And that's where my own papers are going to end up. But like in Green Bay, Rainbow over Wisconsin at their Pride tent has a great history display, but it's all put in a storage locker during the year. And so we need to get that into an archive, and they're working with UW Green Bay to do that as well. Luckily, there were some great oral histories at UW La Crosse and UW Eau Claire, but more places need to have archives where things can be saved. And so don't throw away our history is my strong admonition to folks in the community.
And also, having been involved in local politics, and part of this book is a big list of who is out and involved in politics, do you hope that in reading about the history and the grassroots that makes changes, that this can inspire new generations of people to get involved politically?
It is, and I was compiling the index of that elected officials around the state, and I know I've missed some, and my apologies to all of them who I might have missed, because I kept coming across more, and they were in small places and big places and places where you wouldn't necessarily expect them. And so part of that is this strong tradition of out elected officials in Wisconsin. It goes back to Judy Greenspan's first race for the Madison School Board in 1973. Jim Yaden in 76 became the 4th out elected official in the nation. And so, you know, we now have a U.S. senator, and we've had 3 out congresspeople elected, the first state to do that. New York may catch up to us with this election, but that says something about the openness of our democratic system in Wisconsin, which is part of the progressive tradition, and the fact that the gay community could engage in that tradition and find ways to leverage that to its benefit.
Well, Dick, I want to thank you for your part in helping to preserve this history and for telling me a little more about it.
Very glad to do this work.
Dick Wagner is the author of Coming Out, Moving Forward, Wisconsin's Recent Gay History. You can also find our interview about his first volume of Wisconsin Gay History at wuwm.com.